This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. In 2017, the death of a disabled man signaled that something was not right in the system that was supposed to be caring for him. Carl DeBrody was living in a facility in Fulton, Missouri. But what he experienced there before his death can only be described as abuse and horrific neglect. His caretakers used him as free labor to clean their home. He slept on the basement floor. He was even forced to fight another disabled resident, according to a lawsuit filed by his family after he died. DeBrody's death led to criminal charges and calls for the kind of systemic change that would prevent other cases like it in the future. But a new River City Journalism Fund investigation into Missouri's Division of Developmental Disabilities has found that those changes just have not happened. In fact, in the 6 years since DeBrody's death, records show that 74 people with developmental disabilities have died in some sort of accident while in state care. Nearly 400 people died of undetermined causes. It's a system that's supposed to be taking care of some of the state's most vulnerable people. And to talk about those deaths and the persistent problems in the system, I'm joined by reporter Will Skipworth. Will, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you have spent years now looking into this system, and your investigation was published just this morning. It's titled, Developmentally Disabled Missourians Suffer Abuse and Death in State's Dysfunctional System. Now, I understand that it was Carl DeBrody's death that put you on this path of investigating. Tell us about that, Will.
Right. So I read about Carl DeBrody's death kind of like a lot of other people did. I read up in the newspaper, and it was shocking to me. 2 years later, a couple years later, I came back to the story, and it really still shook me. You know, two things I couldn't get out of my head. I had two questions. I was wondering, what has the state done to make sure this never happens to anybody else again? And is Carl DeBrody the only one? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, what I found is the state's done very little. And Carl is certainly not the only one.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think DeBrody's death got so much attention?
I think it was the horrific nature of it. You know, he was forced to fight other developmentally disabled residents just for the caretaker's amusement, you know, and he died in very dramatic fashion. And it turned into a police investigation and generated a lot of attention. You know, a lot of the other deaths I uncovered just didn't, while equally tragic and sad, you know, someone died in every case, mm-hmm. They didn't have the same media attention. There wasn't the same police investigation. You know, Carl DeBrody was reported missing before anyone found out what happened to him. And so there was a police search. There was all this attention on it. So I think that brought it into the public's kind of knowledge and the public's attention.
Mm-hmm. Now, the accountability piece of this, was anyone held accountable for what happened to Carl?
Yeah, so the two caretakers that did this to him, Sherry Paolo and Anthony Flores, they were sentenced to prison. They were convicted on civil rights and obstruction charges. After the death happened, they did a lot to cover it up. So they got charges. They were charged and convicted for covering up and impeding a federal investigation. So yes, they were sent to prison for that.
Mm-hmm. And you've described the conditions that Carl DeBrody was living in, that there was setting him against other disabled residents, that he was sleeping on the basement floor. What was it that caused his death ultimately?
He ultimately had a stroke. So if you look at legal documents and the wrongful death lawsuits about his death, you'll find that he was discovered convulsing, bleeding from the nose, screaming. A stroke is what ultimately killed him. But it was kind of a long, drawn-out history of abuse, you know. The caretakers admitted that they watched his health decline, and they did not continue to give him his prescribed medical regimen. I mean, a lot went wrong in the situation of Carl DeBrody.
Mm-hmm. And did you find, as you were following this story, you said that there were a couple of questions that you were asking, and one of them had to do with, you know, why is this happening? It, has anything changed? Do you think that what happened with Sherry Palo and Anthony Flores and what they were convicted of, and it was civil rights and obstruction charges, that had any effect on whether there was more reporting after that or any accountability in those cases in which it was found that there was neglect and abuse happening?
Yeah, so it's really hard to say. I do know that, like, situations of abuse and neglect in death have happened since. So, I mean, one thing I tried to zero in on, I was like, there were a lot of safeguards that failed that were meant to protect him. So I wanted to look at a couple of those safeguards. And so one of them I looked at is, like, the procedures for how these complaints of abuse and neglect should be reported and investigated. And so I looked at, did they change that? Did they do anything to amend that? And the answer is not really. I mean, I spoke to the director of the Division of Developmental Disabilities, and she told me the changes weren't really substantive. They weren't really changing how things were done. The only changes that happened were just kind of to update and clarify them, reflect changes in structure and process. Mm-hmm. So, like, she kind of told me that they didn't make any substantive changes in how things were done after Carl DeBrody's death in terms of reporting, even though that reporting system failed miserably. Like, mm-hmm. another example of that is that there were supposed to be nurses and caseworkers reporting on, checking in on them every month, doing face-to-face visits. And they didn't do that. One of the nurses that was supposed to check in on him admitted that she signed 7 months worth of paperwork saying that she'd seen Carl DeBrody when he was already dead. Mm-hmm. So what I tried to zero in on is, I was like, what are the safeguards that were meant to protect him? How did those safeguards fail? And were those safeguards fixed? And what I found is in every case I looked at, there wasn't really any change to fix them.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to invite you into the conversation. Do you have a question or comment about the state of Missouri's system for caring for people with developmental disabilities? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK, or send us an email at talk@stlpr.org. Now, Will, I'd like to kind of zoom out a little bit so that we can get a sense of what this system is, how people become part of it. And we are talking specifically about Missouri's Division of Developmental Disabilities. And it is a system that provides services to more than 40,000 Missourians. That it's not a small number. Now, about 7,500 of those people have disabilities that are so severe that they require the state to take care of them. How is it, Will, that people enter this system to begin with?
Yeah, so that's a great idea. So the way I would explain it is, people with developmental disabilities like autism or Down syndrome, you know, once they become 18 and their parents are no longer their guardian, they often become wards of the state, or they often, even if they don't become wards of the state, they need care. So stuff like independent supported living, where they set you up with an apartment and a caretaker, or they might stay in a group home or a big facility. So you enter it basically as an adult with developmental disabilities, and the program allows you to live in the community or live independently, and they find supports for you to do your everyday life in it. Mm-hmm. And this is all paid through Medicaid.
Right. So between 2017 and 2023, and again, 2017 is when Carl DeBrody died, you obtained records, Will, that show that about 2,600 people with developmental disabilities died in the system. So on average, that's one person every day. And this was sort of agnostic of what the cause was. These are just deaths. Is that rate alone something that is cause for alarm?
It's hard to say. So Jessica Bax, who's, again, the Division of Developmental Disabilities Director, she told me that she's not necessarily concerned with the high number, because she pointed out they have an aging population. But I think if you zero in on like the different subsects, so I found that 74 died in accident, 9 died in homicides, 7 died in suicides, and 392 died in undetermined cause of death. Mm. That to me sounds concerning. And they weren't able to give, they declined to give me records that might clarify how those deaths happened, you know? Mm. And they cited different state statutes. But yeah, we have very little information about how all these deaths happened, except for the ones we were able to find through other means, through the courts, through testimony of caretakers.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a very quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation about people with developmental disabilities dying while under the care of the state of Missouri. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with reporter Will Skipworth. He spent years looking into cases of abuse and neglect in Missouri's Division of Developmental Disabilities. His investigation into that, commissioned by the River City Journalism Fund, was published today. Now, before the break, Will, you were talking about records that you had obtained. Some of them did come from Missouri's Department of Mental Health, and the response that you got included an admission that it had investigated only 2 of the 10 most recent deaths. What is it that you learned from that, Will?
Yeah, so I would say that made it, because they didn't give me those records, but they were willing to admit that, oh, these were the ones we investigated. And they told me that of the ones they investigated, they were all either ongoing or unsubstantiated. And so it was hard to glean too much from that other than the fact that, you know, they had these reports and only so many of them got investigated.
Mm-hmm. Now, we began the conversation talking about Carl DeBrody and his death in 2017. He was under the care of Missouri System for People with Developmental Disabilities. And Will, you also had an opportunity to speak with a number of people who've worked inside this system. And one was Dina Lester. She's a registered nurse from Kansas City and spent 10 years working in the system. She said that DeBrody's death was in part what convinced her to leave.
I became increasingly concerned about the inconsistencies in care and the challenges in implementing meaningful change. I believe deeply in the inherent worth and potential of every individual, and I found it increasingly difficult to reconcile that belief with the level of care and the lack of accountability I observed from all levels of care involved in the individuals. This included direct care staff, their managers and supervisors, company HR department, company CEOs, agency nurses, service coordinators through the county, Department of Mental Health through the state, and Missouri Medicaid. Complaints were made known to all of these entities without any improvement, follow-up, resolution.
That was Dina Lester, a nurse who spent 10 years working in Missouri's system for the developmentally disabled. Will, what is it that you gleaned from Dina about how this system worked?
Yeah, I think Dina was a wealth of information in helping me kind of get a peek behind the curtain. And I think one of the things that she echoed a lot in her statements was that there seems to be, in her view, no system of accountability when abuse happens, when poor levels of care are given. There's a lot of flaws in how abuse and neglect are reported. You know, one thing she said is that she's reported a lot of different instances of abuse, neglect, and she said she never sees action on any of them. And she even showed me screenshots of emails she sent to the different reporting agencies and letters she got back confirming that they received it, But she said she's seen no action on any of them. So I think from her, I learned a lot about just how little accountability and little systems there were in place to kind of protect these people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as a counter to little, Dina lists a lot of actors in this system whom she says is responsible for its dysfunction. And that goes from managers to nurses. I mean, Will, where does the buck stop? Or does it just seem like it's blame that gets passed around?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it's one that's hard to answer. But you talked a lot about getting passed. One quote I have from Dina Lester that really spoke to me is she said, when you go to the hospital, you know, there's quality control in a hospital setting. If you go to have surgery, it's not just doctors and nurses and medical professionals playing every man for himself. There's some sort of oversight and they have to answer to somebody. And she said there's just not that in the developmental disability system. So I do think on a personal level, I think that the Division of Developmental Disabilities should be responsible for oversight over this. And then when there's no oversight, I think that trickles down and you see these private agencies which have contracts with the state. So these are state contracted agencies that, since they're not being held accountable, they're going on and doing this abuse and neglect, and they're not fixing problems within their own agencies. So I think on the top level, you have the Division of Developmental Disabilities, which is part of the Department of Mental Health. And when they let their guard down, that trickles down and problems don't get fixed on lower levels than those private agencies.
Mm-hmm. Now, Will, one of the findings of this investigation that was just published today is about just how few deaths in this system are ever investigated for neglect or abuse. And again, Dina Lester, whom we heard from earlier, she spent 10 years just about as a nurse in that system. And she said that she believes those deaths are being undercounted.
There is really no incentive for agencies to report these findings. If they do report, that results in an investigation for the agency. Some caregivers have experienced abuse and neglect in their own communities, which can normalize these types of behaviors and lead to underreporting. Incident reporting is not anonymous. The incident is seen by the agency itself, so that the people reporting are at risk for retaliatory actions by the agencies, and agencies are able to intercept reporting, preventing outside oversight and review. It's our collective responsibility to break the silence surrounding abuse and neglect.
So, Will, when Dina says it's our collective responsibility to speak out about this abuse, is that something that you are seeing from other people in this system? Is there actually an effort to break this silence?
You know, I spoke with a lot of people for the story that worked in the industry, and I'm really grateful to all of them because they gave me so much information. It's kind of a brave thing to talk about dysfunction in your industry. And so among the people I talked to, there was a lot of sentiment that they really wanted to kind of get the word out there of what's happening. I think one of Dina's quotes that I think goes to that really well is she told me that there's a lot of fear of retribution. You know, people are afraid to speak out because they're afraid that their employers will kind of punish them for doing so. They might get blacklisted from working with certain agencies, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think the people I spoke to, one thing that shocked me is how people from different parts of the state were telling me the same things. And they were also telling me how hard it is to speak out because they're afraid of retribution. They're afraid of their employer kind of coming down on them for it.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that you did note in your piece is that there's no publicly available data that would allow you to compare data on abuse and neglect with other states. Were you able to get any kind of indication on how other states are doing? You know, is this a Missouri problem or one that's everywhere? And really, I mean, does any of that then suggest ways that the system could be improved?
Yeah. So I think there's no publicly available data, but other reporters in other states have done similar work to me. I know a reporter named Molly Parker in Southern Illinois, formerly with the Southern Illinoisan. She had a great investigation that found similar stuff happening in Illinois. West Virginia, there's a reporter named Amelia Nisley who used to work for West Virginia Public Broadcasting. She also found it. But so the national data problem is that I had to obtain these through an open records request, which can be time consuming, which can be difficult. You get some pushback. Every state has a different system. So it's really hard to get that data on a national level. Mm-hmm. And I think, but I think we're able to see from other reporters how this is happening elsewhere. I know there was one activist I spoke to. Her name was Diane Mack. She's not quoted in the story, but I spoke to her a lot and she's really helpful. She has a daughter with developmental disabilities and she's experienced the system a lot. She's moved around the country, several different states. She told me that Missouri was the worst state she's ever seen in terms of this, but she also has seen similar problems in other states.
Right. Well, as we close, I mean, there's a lot of evidence that you've laid out for dysfunction in this system. It seems like Missouri really is not only not doing a good job, but as you mentioned, that activist and what she has seen in other places, why are you so committed to making sure that this story goes out and doesn't sort of remain passed around among people who are part of this system and largely part of the problem?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I mean, on a personal level, I personally believe that everyone deserves to be able to live a full, fulfilled life. And I think, you know, we all have needs. You know, you have needs, I have needs. People with developmental disabilities also have needs. Those needs are just different. And that makes them vulnerable to this kind of stuff. And so I think it's really important that we protect some of the most vulnerable people in our society so they can also become productive members in society. They can also live full, fulfilling lives. And I think, to me, that's really important. And this is an extremely important issue, so I'm grateful you're having me on to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do hope that this does raise awareness in such a way that there is possibly some pressure from outside the system to get things corrected inside. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Will Skipworth is a reporter whose years-long investigation is titled Developmentally Disabled Missourians Suffer Abuse and Death in State's Dysfunctional System. That is now live on our website. That's stlpr.org. It received funding support from the River City Journalism Fund.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.